I'm Ana Cervantes, and there were a variety of roads that led me to be in Mexico now, but the two salient ones, the two outstanding ones, are that I came here in August of 1999 as a Fulbright scholar, which in Mexico is a Fulbright Garcia Robles scholar. So I came here in August of 99 with a grant to develop repertoire of contemporary concert music of Mexico for subsequent performance in the States. That was one thread that pulled me here. And the other one is that, as most people will guess, knowing my name of Cervantes, I am the product of a Mexican father and a Nebraska mother. And my paternal side is actually from here, where I am based now, in Guanajuato, the beautiful colonial city of Guanajuato, which is the capital of the state of Guanajuato in Mexico. There were other things that kind of pulled me towards here, but I would say that those are the two principal reasons for my being here. And why am I still here now? Well, because when that Fulbright grant was up, it was a lecture research grant. The research part was developing this repertoire of contemporary concert music of Mexico, and the lecture part was teaching at the School of Music at the university here. And that grant lasted for 6 months. And when it was done, I felt a very strong desire to stay on for a little while. And so I decided to do that. And so that, quote, little while is now, good heavens, 13 years.
Now, you say you went down to Mexico initially to study and identify music from Mexico, which you could then bring back and concertize in the U.S. At what point, Ana, did this mission expand to the act of soliciting new music through commissions?
Well, that's a very good, like all of your questions, it's a good one, James. That, in a very real way, that Fulbright project bore fruit with my second CD, which is Agua y Piedra, Water and Stone, which is a disc of recent music of Mexico, that's in its subtitle, in fact. And these were the world premiere recordings, in fact, of the works by seven Mexican composers. And the great majority of that music was music that I had started to work on either shortly before or during the Fulbright year. And I think I worked on all of that music I worked on with the composers, and most of it pretty extensively, more than once. And so Agua y Piedra, Water and Stone, was sort of the coming to fruition of that Fulbright year. And then I remember very clearly, not long after that CD came out, which was in 2004, I should mention that it's becoming a reality is thanks to the FONCA, the National Foundation for Culture and the Arts of Mexico, which gave me a grant to realize that CD as part of a co-investment program that they have. And in this case, the co-investor was the Institute of Culture of the State of Guanajuato. So I yet again thank both of those very worthy institutions for their support. So that CD came out. I won the grant in 2003. The CD we recorded, I think, like in the spring of 2004, and I presented the CD, I don't know, sometime in the summer or fall of 2004. And the previous disc had come out in early 99, actually, and I resolved that I wanted it not to be 5 years before the next CD came out. I also, you know, this little gleam of a thought came into my mind, which was, all of the music of Agua y Piedra was music that had been either commissioned by someone else or premiered by someone else the very first time. I played the premiere of that music in many various cities in Mexico and various cities in the U.S., in Cuba, later in Spain. And so I had lived with that music long and fruitfully. And the thought came into my mind, maybe it's time for me to commission music, for me to be sort of the instigator of new music. As I look back on it, it really didn't take that much time. It certainly wasn't 5 years until the next CD. It was only two, because as I began to think about this idea of commissioning music, of course, in parallel, I started to think about what would be a kind of a good theme for a commissioning project. And in 2005 was going to be the 50th anniversary of the first publication of Pedro Páramo, of Juan Rulfo. And based on the very sage advice of a good friend here, I decided that the theme, the sort of central axis, as it were, of that, my first commissioning project, would be Juan Rulfo.
Just take a moment, Ana, and explain the significance of Juan Rulfo.
Yes. Juan Rulfo was a Mexican writer who lived from 1917 to 1986. And his output, if you care about quantity and volume, his output was very, very small. But as Susan Sontag remarked in her wonderful preface to the second, the good English translation of Pedro Páramo, you know, all that's important is that an author write one really good book. that's all that's really important. And so Juan Rulfo wrote a collection of short stories, El Llano en Llamas, the usually translated as The Burning Plain, and another book called Pedro Páramo, which is arguably both a short novel and a long narrative poem, and which is a foundational book for Hispanic letters in the rest of the 20th century. I mean, Gabriel García Márquez, by his own account, could recite most of Pedro Páramo from memory at a certain point, and has said many, many times that 100 Years of Solitude would never have been possible had it not been for Juan Rulfo's Pedro Páramo. They're extraordinary pieces of writing, both the Pedro Páramo and El Llano en Llamas. And yes, his photography is equally as eloquent as his writing. You know, he never really made his living as a writer. He always did other things. And in the latter part of his life, what he did do was more connected with writing. But there was a time, I forget how many, during how many years it was, that he was a tire salesman. And so he traveled all over Mexico selling tires and taking pictures. And the photography is just, well, it's just stunning. It's formidable, incredible, eloquent, and in a way that I would find it hard to define. It seems so quintessentially Mexican. It communicates something about Mexico that I don't know, that few other things do. His photography, really extraordinary. And so actually, many of the composers of this Rumor de Páramo project, which roughly translates as Murmurs from the Wasteland, many of the composers chose to inspire their pieces in some part of Pedro Páramo, but a number of them also picked a story from The Burning Plain, from El Llano en Llamas, and several of them talked about how the photographs were also a very profound inspiration for them. and not only Mexican composers, you know, I mean, of course, the composers for this project were from five countries, Mexico, the U.S., Spain, the U.K., and Brazil. And the Brazilian composer, actually, Silvia Berg, chose as kind of the central image of that inspired her piece is one of Rulfo's photographs. Her father is Brazilian, and her mother had been born in Portugal, and so she talked about how the landscapes in a number of Rulfo's photographs reminded her of some of these very old, almost abandoned villages that she had seen in Portugal. So one of the things I think that is appealing about this project and you know, about Rulfo's writing is that, on the one hand, this is material which is deeply rooted in Mexico. And not only that, in the case of writing in a very specific part of Mexico, Los Altos de Jalisco, but at the same time, it's universal. And many people find things that they find immediately recognizable in Rulfo's writing, and I think also by extension in a lot of his music.
A few of the opening bars from Silvia Berg's Dobles del Páramo from Ana Cervantes' series of commissions, essentially asking composers to create music in reaction to or inspired by the landmark book Pedro Páramo by Juan Rulfo. In this case, the inspiration is also derived from the photography of Juan Rulfo. Ana, not to jeopardize our friendship, but don't you think most sensible people issue a commission to one composer for one piece of music? Why did you decide to solicit numerous pieces from a whole host of different composers?
Oh, I don't know, James. I have asked myself that. And it's going to sound very quixotic and crazy, as you say, any sensible person would have decided to commission one piece from one composer or something. I think part of it, for me, quite honestly, is that I find the creation of music is something really magical. I think that it was very appealing for me to feel as though I were kind of, I don't know, a kind of musical midwife, you know, helping to bring this new music into existence. I mean, really, there were only going to be like 18 pieces, actually, originally, in four countries. But, you know, what happened with that project, James, is that between composers who delivered late and composers who delivered longer than what I had asked for, there was too much music for the first disc. I mean, you know, you only fit, like, what is it, 72 minutes or something?
Mm-hmm.
74 minutes if you're pushing it. And by the time we got finished doing all the editing of all the music I recorded for that first disc, we realized we had something like 83 minutes. What was I going to do? You know, I felt artistically and morally committed to the project. And so I just decided, well, you know, I'm going to have to make a second recording. And so Solo Rumores is kind of the, you know, the unexpected, the unanticipated second child
mm-hmm.
of that project.
You it would be unfair to the music and your performances to say that it's as impressive, but I remember seeing a photograph, and I hope to be able to post it for our listeners. You assembled all of the composers. I think all but one ended up in that group photo, and you can correct me if I'm wrong. I found that to be so impressive to see all of those people there gathered together and their collective energy all focused on your project. I think that must have been really special, if not overwhelming.
It was. And what you say about all that energy is certainly true. I mean, it was just like a huge wave of collective creative energy there. And you know, a couple of the composers who came then, I had never even met personally. I mean, we'd spoken many, many times on the telephone and been in communication by email for, by that time, you know, several years. But when they came to the ensayo general, to the dress rehearsal of that program, the night before that world premiere in the Cervantino Festival in 2006, that was the first time I had met Anne LeBaron of the U.S. and the first time I met Stephen McNeff of Great Britain. So that was like, I don't know, that was a hugely emotional thing, to be meeting these composers kind of in the flesh for the first time. To have them all be there listening to their music, I mean, that was really extraordinary. It was an amazing moment. It was a huge amount of work to put it all together, but it was an amazing moment.